Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cook, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Like most people now, I have a coffee machine. I make an espresso. I walk over to my cooker tap. I put boiling water in it straight from the tap. And I have an Americano. It's like I'm living in some amazing future. It's so very bloody cool. It's a cooker tap. My afternoon tea takes no time either. But tea bag in the cup. Go over to the tap. You turn on the tap. There you have a brew. It's such a great beer kit. If you can afford one, I do recommend them. I literally don't know anyone who's bought one and said it was crap. Everyone who buys them goes, yeah, no, they're just brilliant. And I have it now. So go to cooker.co.uk for more details and look at the different models. So I must apologize. In recent times, there's been a few problems with the sound. That's my fault. I bought a new bit of kit and I didn't set it up properly. And I didn't have the microphone switched on, basically. I had it. So some of the podcasts recently have been via the microphone in my laptop. And I apologize for that. I've fixed it now. And I think this is the last one that's going to be on. So again, I apologize profusely. It's still fine, the sound, but hopefully we're now getting studio quality sound. My bad, as people say. Right, today's hour is a bit different. I'm mixing it up a bit. Today's hour, I mean business. Well, actually, I'm talking business. I heard about this vacuum cleaner company that decided to take on Dyson, Henry, Hoover, Shark, Miele. What have I missed? All those brands. It's a big task, you know, to take on those brands, but he seems to be making a dent in the market, and I thought it'd be a good idea to hear the story and get inspiration for us all. Now, this could come over like a bit of an advert, but I'm not going to apologize for that, as I think the conversation is going to be interesting. And I believe you are more than able to make sensible decisions when you buy your next vacuum cleaner. You won't necessarily go into the shop and go, do you know what? I listened to the Lovejoy Hour, and so I'm going to buy this one. I'm sure you're more than capable of looking at all the different brands and making a decision. Anyway, his company is called Halo, and his name is Paul Bagwell. Let's meet him. Here's Paul. Paul, hello. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you? Are things well? How's business?
Business is good, thank you. Yeah, it's one of the things I've noticed since I've been running a business is you check constantly. You can't help it. And I've taken some advice on this, and they always tell me the best thing to do is just let it run. You don't have to worry about it, and I can't help myself. It's like an addiction. I have to check every half hour how we're doing. And we're doing all right. Thank you for asking.
So what are you checking? Sales? Is that the only figure you're bothering to check?
Yeah, it's well, in this connected age, it all matters. So obviously we see hour by hour how many we're selling, but also what people are saying about us. So whether it's social media or reviews people are leaving for us, there's just like a big hose pipe of information always coming at us. So there's always something to obsess about. And if you're a little bit obsessive like I can be, then there's a lot to take in on an hour by hour basis.
Okay, I want to get onto all those subjects, especially reviews and stuff and how important they are in this modern day and age. But first of all, I want to hear the story. So can you take us back from the beginning? How did you get? You were working at Dyson, weren't you? What's your background?
Well, I've been working for a number of the big brands for 20 odd years now, and kind of from an early age was always fascinated in how things worked and how they were put together. And always fascinated about how much thought had to go into creating things that just worked well. And that was always fascinating to me when I was younger. So I pursued that as a vocation, really. I went and studied design at university. And from there, at the time I graduated, which is some time ago now, Dyson themselves were quite a small kind of UK focused company. And it was a really interesting place to join because they didn't spend a lot of money on people, so they tended to recruit a lot of graduates. So as a graduate, you could walk in there thinking that you knew everything but actually knowing nothing, and you were given a lot of freedom to experiment and to try things. It's a very different business now. It's multinational. It's kind of not so UK focused, but back then it was a very exciting place to be, and you got a lot of freedom. You know, I was running big teams, doing things I shouldn't have been allowed to do in my early 20s, which was exciting.
So what was your job though? What were you employed to do?
So I was a designer there initially. I actually got around a bit and I ended up in marketing of all places, which I had no right to be in, but it was a fantastic experience because that's, when you look at that company, people always see it as a technology company, but in reality, it's an amazing marketing company. And so to have the opportunity to experience that there was fascinating about how they communicate with customers. A lot of everything we do is about communicating with each other. So to understand how a business like that managed to grow itself and get in everybody's consciousness as a result of the way they communicated was really insightful.
Paul, how did you get to the place where you decided to set up your own company then? So you're working at Dyson, you're in your early 20s. What's the journey to start doing this, your own cleaner?
So I was at that company for a long time and actually went to several other companies since then and worked for a couple of other big names and actually came to a point where I was in a big global role, kind of worked my way up, climbed the ladder and was sitting on top of a big global organization at a time where the big corporate I was working for decided not to be global any longer. So I ended up with a kind of a bigger job in a business that was fragmenting. And that got to the point where I either did a smaller job there or it was redundancy. So redundancy was my way out. So I found my place where I had all this experience. I'd kind of climbed a corporate ladder and I had to decide what to do next. Do I go and join another organization?
Paul, sorry to interrupt you. I just want to know what the companies were you worked for because I'm fascinated by it. So you've worked for how many, which are the big companies you work for?
So I worked for Dyson, then I moved to Vax and then joined their global business. And then I worked for SharkNinja most recently before starting the business.
Brilliant. Just tell me, how's the competition between them all? Are they fierce rivals, all of them?
It's yes, absolutely. There's a lot of rivalry. I think before 30 years ago, I think it was like a cozy hegemony where everybody just kind of rubbed along and let each other have their share of the market. Now it's much more cutthroat and everybody is out to kind of take advantage of everybody else and to take each other's market share. So yeah, it's an interesting market and it's one that tends to have a lot of competition and a good deal of litigation as well, which makes it quite spicy sometimes.
Oh, so people are looking at other people's products and going, we own that bit, why are you doing that?
Yes, that does happen a lot. And it's one of the fun things about launching a new product in this area is that your first customers will be your competitors. So within the first few weeks of launching something, you'll be seeing the items going out to the head offices of your competitors.
All right. So this is a fiercely competitive industry. I mentioned a few brands in my intro. You've got Dyson and Henry and Hoover and Shark and Mele. And you just mentioned Vax there. It's a massive marketplace with all these giants in it. What makes you think, all right, I'm going to have a go at this then? I mean, God, you've got to be mental.
I think, well, the first thing is that the one thing I've realized having started this is we were incredibly naive when we began. And I think that was our superpower in a way because we had I've worked in the industry, so I'm not completely disassociated with how complex this is and how much you have to do. But I think our naivety was our superpower because the reason why people don't come in and upset these big companies is because it's a really difficult, challenging thing to do. And if you knew that before you started, you'd probably go and, you know, do up houses and flip them for a living or do something else. Anything but this. But the naivety made us think, well, everybody's kind of doing the same thing. So we believe we have a better way of doing something. And all we have to do is bring it to market and we think there'll be an audience for it. Now, we weren't so naive as to not do market research. I remember from years back watching shows like Dragon's Den and people being rightly ripped to pieces for having great ideas and never researching the market or understanding what price to sell at or anything like that. Fortunately, my wife's background is in market research. She used to do things like testing TV commercials and things like that for Diageo and those massive brands. So she knows how to get out quite cheaply on the internet and ask people some questions and ask them how they feel about something. So we originally came up with the idea of a product that was very different to everybody else's, and we weren't sure whether we were onto something or not. So the first thing we did was, this was actually right at the beginning where we started spending our own money for the first time. So for 500 quid, we managed to get out on the internet to ask people if we could do this. It was this shape, it was this price, it had these benefits over the competitors. What do you think about it? And after like 2 weeks of this research being out there, we got it back, collated it, and found overwhelmingly people would be interested in what we had to sell. which firstly blew our minds and secondly gave us a whole new problem, because we had something that we thought was a good product. We had a load of customers saying they'd like to buy it if we could bring it to market. So it's a fork in the road then. You know, we either say, oh, it's great, validate an idea we've had, let's park it and go back to our day jobs, or there's a business here. You know, there's an opportunity here that somebody can take advantage of it. Why don't we? And, you know, there are always lots of reasons not to do something. But the reason we found to do it was to say, well, there is definitely something here. So if we don't do it and we look back in 20 years, as we've had, you know, good careers and we've had, you know, we already had great jobs, you know, we were doing okay. But if we look back in 20 years and say there was that fork in the road and we decided not to and now we'll never know, then that would be a massive regret. So that's when we thought, well, we're all in at this point. We either do it or we don't. And if we do it, we start it and we keep going until it's successful, because that's the only way to persevere with it. And that's the fork in the road we took. But we did that knowing we had a great opportunity.
I imagine I'm going to keep on interrupting you, but I want to get the timeline, because I think this is going to be inspirational for a lot of people. So how long ago did you initially have an idea? What was the initial idea? How did it come about? And then how long was it before you had a prototype that you could take to market and ask people about it?
So this all started when I finished working for the big guys, and I was doing some other things in some different industries. And I kind of looked back at what was happening in vacuum cleaners. And vacuum cleaners are pretty much had been the same since the early 1990s, and that chap Dyson came along with his bagless technology. And that was, you know, that was a massive departure and it changed the industry. But what happened in the last 5 years is everything had gone cordless. So batteries were getting better, motors were getting better, and the product was suddenly had this extra degree of freedom. But what everybody else was doing, as we saw it, was they were just taking the product from 30 years ago, so the bagless vacuum cleaner, and trying to put it in the palm of your hand. And the challenge there was a load of plastic, there was a load of heavy things, which made it big and cumbersome. And despite being big and cumbersome, it didn't have a lot of dirt capacity. The technology was allowing people to use cordless as their only vacuum cleaner because the performance was so good. But they would only have like a Coke can full of dirt capacity inside, which means you're always emptying it. I've noticed this in several households, but there's like a Mexican standoff with vacuum cleaners in the house between, you know, a couple of people are living there. The vacuum cleaner gets more and more full and gets above that max line, and the lights come on and tells you it needs changing. And it's always somebody else's job to empty it. And that can go on for weeks in my house. So that's one of the things we focused on, was to make sure you can get a load of dirt in there. If you're using it as your only vacuum cleaner, you want it to suck in as much dirt as a real full-size vacuum cleaner does. So it was the really heavy nature of the product that was in the market. It was the fact they had no dirt capacity. And also for cordless, a lot of people were compromising on performance, and a lot of people were buying cordless and had that nagging doubt in their mind that they weren't really cleaning, that it was just kind of moving the dirt around and it wasn't doing a real job. And those were really our three insights. And that was what we started doing, you know, just noodling around in my garage, trying to come up with a product idea, was to find something that could be light, could have big capacity, could have huge performance. And that's where Capsule was born. We decided to, well, the big leap was we decided to make it out of carbon fiber. And the great thing about carbon fiber, it's a space age material, but it's super strong and super light, which means we can have something which is incredibly tough, but it has a load of space inside for a very thin shell. So Capsule's shell is a 1 millimeter piece of carbon fiber tube. That means there's a load of space inside for dirt capacity. There's a load of space inside for big motors. There's loads of space inside for big batteries. And that was the idea. That was the bit kind of knocked together in my garage, created an interesting picture for an internet piece of research that we then went out to market with to say, nobody's doing this, but if we could do it for this price, would you be interested to it? And it was something like 85% of people said they would put it on their shortlist if we could bring it to market. And that was, so this was at the beginning of the process, around about 2018, when we thought we were onto something. And it's always, you know, the fact that it's 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration is so true, because that was so the easy bit, was to come up with the idea and validate it. Bringing it to market was then, of course, the next step.
Right. So, by the way, Capsule is the name of the vacuum cleaner, but the company's Halo. That's correct, yeah?
That's right, and it's one of the many things we had to kind of start from scratch was to create a brand around this opportunity.
So the idea, I'm just trying to get a timeline exactly straight here, because, you know, these things take time. The actual idea, when you were sitting with your wife and going, we should do this, what year was that roughly around?
So it was 2018 when we did the research.
And then you were talking to people in 2018, were you, about it? Was it that quickly?
It was, having the idea is one thing. Saying it out loud to strangers, I found, was the big step, because suddenly you're open to scrutiny and you have people saying, no, that'll never work. And why would you want to do that? And, you know, there's a stress test that happens once you say it out loud. So I think it was probably a good 3 or 4 months before, having had that research back and kind of done that in on the quiet, to then start to talk to other people to sound them out about it. And that was a big step in itself. You know, we still had day jobs at that point, so, you know, we still had lots of other things, and, you know, we have young children, we moved house in the middle of all this, there's lots of real life stuff going on alongside this.
Then how long is it before you get a prototype together then?
So the first one I knocked together in my garage, so that took a weekend. And then turning that into a real product was the difficult bit. So everything has to be turned into 3D in the computer. You then have to send it off to be 3D printed. And this is actually part of the big revolution the last few years is when I started my career, it cost you £80,000 for a 3D printer, and it would take you a week to get the bits back. They're £250 each now, and I've got two in my garage, and, you know, I can make a prototype every weekend now, which is fantastic. You know, there is every reason why everybody could be doing product development now, because the cost of entry is so little. And that allowed us to get those first few prototypes together as a result of that. So then once it's kind of in the computer, once it's in the 3D, it's then about how do you turn something you can make in your garage on a 3D printer into a mass-produced product. And that's the difficult bit, because you have to go where everybody else gets this stuff made, which is still in Asia. You know, we'd love to be making everything in the UK. We'd love to make everything closer to home, but all of the existing infrastructure is in Asia. So that was another challenge, because as a startup business with no trading history, with no kind of record of doing this, you're knocking on the door of factories saying, please take me seriously. My idea is awesome and it's going to sell loads, but you know, you need to give me a leg up here and let me get started. And that's, there's a lot of reasons, again, not to. There's a lot of reasons why those big factories will not want to support you and not want to bring your product to market when they're getting big orders from people that are already in the market. So that was a big step when our first factory took us on.
And how much is carbon fiber? Is it carbon fiber? Is that what it's made out of? Do you call it carbon fiber or just carbon?
Carbon fiber, yeah. So yeah, it's exactly the same as you have on your bicycle or you have in sports cars. How much of the product is carbon fiber?
How expensive is it? Because obviously you're saying if you look at a racing bike and they say they make it out of carbon fiber, a road bike, you're going, whoa, that's a few more quid than a steel bike. So is it similar in a cleaner?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's we believe, the world's first carbon fiber domestic appliance. And again, our naivety powered us to decide to do that. And then the reality was there are reasons why people don't make carbon fiber domestic appliances, because it's a short production batch material. It can have a lot of imperfections with it. And it's really, you know, it's a very space age material that doesn't really lend itself to making tens of thousands of them a year, and that's one of the things we've had to overcome. But the benefit, the reason we did it, is because it is super light and super strong. You know, it's indestructible. We have looked to sell these to a company in Australia that want to use them commercially, so to use them to clean hotels and places like that. And so we polished up our samples, we put them in the post, we made sure they got kind of white gloved to Australia and arrived there in pristine condition. And the first thing those guys did was throw it down the stairs to see what would happen. That's the great thing about this material, because it is incredibly tough, and that's why it's worth all the expense or the complication of using this very premium material in domestic appliance, because it gives us all these benefits that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Does anyone own the suck? Does anyone own the patent on it? Because Dyson always talk about a spiral suck or something. I mean, I don't really understand how a vacuum cleaner sucks, but But does anyone, how do they suck, and does anyone own it? Is there a bit where you're going, we really want it to suck like this, but Dyson or Hoover or Mele own this form of sucking? This is such a bizarre conversation.
There's an awful lot of intellectual property, an awful lot of patents in this field, which is why people have always been suing each other for the last 30 years, because they don't like other people getting close to what they do. But in reality, a lot of those are nuances. So, you know, there's slight things about, you know, I've made it this shape rather than this shape, and that gives me slightly better performance. And it's debated in the industry for the last 10 years or so. It's a bit like pharmaceuticals and their blockbuster drugs. You know, are there any blockbuster patents left in floor care? Because a lot of this stuff was done kind of 30, 40, 50 years ago, and a lot of its time expired. So it becomes part of the, what's they call, known in the arts. So it's generally available to everybody. And the kind of the things that are left to protect are so nuanced that they're not the most important thing in what you do. You know, to use a bit of patent that's owned by Joe Bloggs is not really any more successful as just finding your own solutions to things. So there's not really any roadblocks in what we're trying to do. The benefit of our performance is really about what we know and how we apply it ourselves. Some of that we have patented it. Some of that is a trade secret. So rather than write it down, you know, the deal with the patent is you can protect something for up to 20 years, but you have to tell people what you've done. A trade secret's slightly different because there is a bit like Coca-Cola. There's a recipe of normal ingredients you put them together in a certain ratio or a certain way, and it makes something unique. And you lock it in a cupboard and don't tell anybody. And that for us is, you know, that secret sauce is actually the key to our performance much more than our patents. So that's the bit that we are very secretive about.
What's the general principle of how these things work, though? How does it suck up the dust? I know on yours you've got three different settings for different strength of sucking. It's so bizarre having this conversation. But how does it really work? And what is actually going on in these machines? Because with Dyson, you know, they always run that advert where you see the sort of, you kind of see it try and create sort of some sort of spiral thing going, which you feel sucking up. Is that how they're all working?
So that they all share basic principles. So there's all of them have a fan in driven by a motor that moves the air from one place to another. So that's how the air comes through your carpet and up into the vacuum cleaner. The fan is sucking the air through there. There's then always a mechanism for separating the dirt from the air, so you get clean air coming out the back. Bagless vacuums, like those big brands that we all know very well, do that predominantly with cyclones, where they're spinning the air really fast and the dirt falls out before the air does, so the air goes through, the dirt falls behind. But then they always have some sort of filter, so just like literally a cloth mesh between the cyclone and the air coming out the back. So cyclones do some of the job, but they don't do all of the job. And that's how Dyson work. And that's, you know, that was their revolution 30 years ago, was to go to have this bagless system. We've actually gone in a slightly different direction, where we've put what we call a dust pouch between before the motor. So that's taking the dirt out of the air. The dust pouch is kind of not dissimilar to bags that people have had for many years, but we've done a couple of things which are new and unique to us. So the big problem with bags is the running costs and also the environmental impact. They're basically made of the same stuff as your shopping bags, and they all go to landfill and they never compost. The way we separate the dirt from the air is to make a dust pouch which is entirely made of cardboard and paper. All of that cardboard and paper comes from sustainable sources. Because it's only cardboard and paper, it's much cheaper for us to make. It's much cheaper for us to sell to the customer. So the running costs are actually quite low. And the benefit of it is it completely encapsulates the dust. So you don't have to clean anything out. You don't have to wash your filters each time. You just put this thing into your recycling, or you can put it into your compost heap at home, and it will biodegrade if you want to. So you can get rid of the dust really easily, and you don't have to do any maintenance afterwards. So that gives us part of the reason why we have huge capacity. We're 1.6 litres, which is kind of four times a lot of these bagless vacuum cleaners. But it's also a much nicer way of disposing of the dirt. So there's always got to be those two things. There's always got to be a motor with a fan on it and a way of separating the dirt from the air. And it's that secret sauce about how you present those things, how you be successful with those things.
Is it paper recycling? Is that what you mean? You stick it in the paper recycling?
Yes. Yeah. It's like I say, it's just like your newspaper. Right. It can be recycled or it will compost. So there, and it's all of everything we do is about not leaving a permanent mark on the planet. It's something our industry is very guilty about. You know, we work in consumer goods, we sell domestic appliances, and something our industry is very guilty about is just churning out new stuff all the time. So, you know, you'll buy something, you'll feel glad if it lasts a year, and then you'll throw it in the bin. We try and be sustainable in everything we do because it's important to us, but most importantly, it's important to our customers. So that's why all of our consumables are from sustainable sources and they're compostable. Our product itself, if you look at the total life cycle of a product, the way to make it have less environmental impact is to make it last for longer. So that's the number one thing we do, is to make sure we've got the motors that will last for 10 plus years. We've got the engineering, the plastics, the carbon fiber will all last for 10 plus years. So that rather than throwing this thing away and replacing it after 2 years, you can keep it for that period of time. And actually, uniquely, in our industry, we have what we call our ReLife service, the Halo Capsule Refresh, where if you think your batteries, like your phone, the battery's taking a memory where it has less capacity than it used to, it's getting towards the end of its life, you can just phone us up. We'll collect your product from you. We'll bring it back. We will recycle your old battery, we'll put a new battery in, we'll put new filters in, we'll give everything a polish, and we'll send it back to you, and we'll re-life your product. So basically, it's as new, so it will last you for another 3, 5, 10 years as a result of that. So you never have to throw this product away, you just re-life it each time it gets a little bit tired.
That must cost you a fortune to do. Obviously, you charge for that, but does that make sense, financial sense for you and the customer?
The price of it is not prohibitive. So we price it at the same price as just buying a new battery from our competitors. And it's not, you know, it's not the highest margin part of what we do. It's not going to make us rich. The reason that we, you know, retire early and go and sit on the beach is not going to be because we re-life our product. But it's about a new way of approaching consumer products. And we see it as an investment, because what we don't want to do is to sell you the next vacuum cleaner in 2 or 3 years. We want to bring out the other products that you want to buy from Halo Appliances, because it stands for the same things of sustainability and high performance and, you know, a great product. And that's why we do it, because it's important to us that customers love our product. And if you can keep something for 10 years rather than 2 years, you will love our product. And that's why we do this.
Yeah, it's all about battery life at the moment, isn't it, with electric cars, everything. I've got one of those handheld Dysons, you know, it's been great for cat fur, basically, you know, one of the portable ones, the tiny little ones, which, you know, you have to empty pretty much as soon as you've used it. Though the battery on it now has diminished so rapidly, it's kind of barely usable now. It's getting to that stage. And that was actually the question I was going to ask you, what happens with the batteries? Because obviously the ones where you plug in into the electrics, the maybe thought of as old fashioned, they're going to last. They don't have a battery, so it doesn't matter, does it? They're going to last for a lot longer, I suppose, do they?
Actually, it's the opposite. It's kind of counterintuitive to say that, but a lot of those corded vacuum cleaners tend to have, it's not the battery that runs out, there's no battery to run out, but the motors tend to have a limited life. Right. Because they motors are driven by a couple of things. So basically, you need something switching on and off to turn a motor around. So there's like a series of switches on a motor. You switch things around them on and off, and that makes them spin round. On a conventional vacuum cleaner, on a corded vacuum cleaner, there's parts that wear out. There's the bits where the electricity gets onto the bit that spins round, which is always in contact, it's always rubbing, and those wear out over time. So a corded vacuum cleaner will burn out in 5, 6, 7 years. Those motors that you use are great in corded vacs because they're cheap and they're kind of disposable and they do a job. I talked a little bit earlier about how performance has changed, how technologies are now cordless vacs to be much better. A lot of them have what are called brushless motors, where instead of having physical contact between the motor and the outside world, it's all done by magic's a strong word, but it's all done by a different sort of technology where you're kind of flipping magnets on and off. So there's actually nothing to wear out. So the actual core technology, and the reason we do that is because they're much more efficient, because you've got a finite amount of power when you have a battery rather than plug in the wall. Yeah. You have to do everything much more efficiently. So we use those more efficient motors to actually last longer. So counterintuitively, cordless vacuums do tend to have longer life.
Okay. I love the idea of magic happening in my cleaner.
So you've got the prototype, you've got it all done. We love the product. The next thing you need is, I just kind of like to go through the timeline of this. I know nothing about running a business, so I'm absolutely intrigued by this. So then you need cash, right? So you're going to go to some venture capitalists, I assume, or someone to invest, because I don't know. I'm not sure whether your redundancy gave you enough to set up a whole a business of vacuum cleaners. But I imagine you've got investment. And if you do, you're sitting there. If I was Dragon Tim and you went to me, look, I've got this vacuum cleaner, I'd be going, hold on a second, Paul, what about Dyson? What about Henry? What about Vax? What about Shark? What about Hoover? These are a crowded market. I mean, those conversations, unless you did manage to fund it all yourself, those conversations must have been pretty tough conversations to have.
Yeah, no, a smart thing to do at the time would have been to create a nice PowerPoint presentation and go and shop it around venture capitalists. In our wisdom, and like I say, we were powered by naivety, what we did was we kind of created a spreadsheet which says we've got this much redundancy and we think it's going to cost this much to get into business. And as long as we sell a certain amount at a certain speed, we think we'll be able to take that money, buy some more, and then grow again, and then sell those, get some money back, buy some more, and grow again. So actually, we bootstrapped the whole thing. So amazing. We started the business based upon some redundancy money, and with a bit of man maths, created a spreadsheet that showed we were going to get away with it. Didn't quite work out like that, but you know, at this point, we haven't taken anybody else's venture capital money, and we've created a business. We created this kind of living, thriving thing that we can't stop now because it's going, with a small amount of money that we're slowly but surely turning into a slightly bigger amount of money.
Amazing! I love that. I love the fact you took that pun. All right, let's talk about the product then. How well is it doing? I was looking at the reviews online. I mean, they're phenomenal, aren't they? When you get sort of, I think you were second best Witch on Witch magazine, their gadget for the year, and various, you know, you're getting 5 stars all over. Is that the important thing, though, those reviews? Is that how you sort of start judging yourself, and how much in the marketplace are you getting at the moment?
Yeah, it's the best bit of the job is when people tell you that you've done all right. Witch magazine reviewed us very early and made us a best buy very early on, which for a brand new brand with one product is kind of unheard of. You know, we got their backing very early on, and they kind of got us. They got the fact that we were sustainable. They got the fact that we created something high performance that was really different to anything else that was carrying on offer. So they thought that was important for their readers to know about, and really, really made a big difference to us. There's also the website Tech Advisor, actually in our first couple of months on sale, they reviewed the products and they named us their best vacuum cleaner. You know, again, a new brand, only one product, and you know, we were number one ahead of all of these massive brands. And that was a real kind of pat on the back. You know, there's been some difficult times starting a new business, but the fact that people can see that we're onto something here has been really validating. And that really, you know, we launched in 2020, and the pinnacle of that was the end of 2020, which had actually given me a bit of a tip off, because they asked us to send some images in because they might be publishing something about us for their products of the year review. And we thought, oh, hang on, we might be onto something here. Thought no more about it until the issue dropped on my doormat, opened it up and started flicking through from 50 down, and kind of flicked through from 50 to 40 and thought, oh, we're not in this. This is a bit worrying. Flicked on a bit further, 30 down to 20, 20 down to 10, thinking, oh God, I think there's been some mistake. Maybe we're just on a shortlist and we never quite made the top 50. And then finally found that we were number 2, just ahead of some Kia electric car, and then the Apple AirPods were at number 1. So we're a bit like, well, hang on a minute. We've come second only to Apple in our first ever year of trading. This isn't a bad result, is it?
That's absolutely amazing. What did that feel like?
It was literally unbelievable. And to this day, I still pinch myself, because, you know, it's for us to from a small business started in our garage to be number 1 number 2 just behind Apple was just mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing.
In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote within seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback with a 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Trustpilot based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ethos.com. Application times and rates may vary.
How do the other brands deal with you? Do they? Because I know it's very competitive out there, and brands are not nice to each other. It must be said. My industry, TV, they're not nice to each other. I mean, they can't do it as much now because of on demand. But I've always said this. I've never quite understood it in TV, where ITV and BBC look at each other's schedules and they schedule their best programs up against each other to try and kill each other. And I'm like, oh, what about the viewer? What's going on here? Why the viewer wants to watch them both? Why are you settling? But that's it. It's like people just seem obsessed with that competition. I wonder if there's like the big department stores and stuff where your Dysons, your Sharks and stuff start saying they put pressure on, don't stock the Halo capsule because we don't want any more competition. Does the things like that happen out there in that industry?
It's actually changed a lot in this connected age because 10, 15 years ago, you'd only ever reach a customer through a big retailer, through a big store, and that's where the pressure could be brought to bear. It's so much more exciting now because I have a direct relationship with my customers. You know, we talk to people, whether it's through social media, through print advertising, through TV advertising in a little way that we're doing it. And we can have that direct relationship and nobody can interfere with that relationship. That's the great thing, because as long as we can explain why we're different and why we're better, then customers are making up their own mind and they're buying into us. And there's nobody that can get in the way of that conversation, which makes it so much more exciting. It makes it so much, it makes it possible for us to exist in this crowded market space.
So is all your business done online, or majority of your business done online sales then?
It is, but the way for that is surprised us. You know, we started this thinking we were going to be like this kind of tech startup and we just put it on social media and people would click through and they would buy it. The thing we found most successful, and again, it surprised us greatly, is that our early adopters tend to be the sort of people that you wouldn't expect to be early adopters. Because we have this message of performance and lightweight, it really resonates with senior buyers. So people who are more senior in age, who might be empty nesters, who are still very house proud, and they don't want to lug a big, heavy corded vacuum cleaner around, but they still care about how their home looks, are really buying into our product because of the performance, because of the lightweight. And we've managed to reach them by advertising in traditional newspapers, particularly during lockdown, where people read their newspaper from cover to cover because they couldn't go anywhere else. It's been extraordinarily successful for us, and that really surprised us. The demographics are such a good match, because we'll sell a vacuum cleaner to anyone. You know, we have a great product, but the lightweight performance plays really well with the senior buyer. And the Daily Telegraph, I couldn't believe this when I heard that the average age of a Daily Telegraph reader is 85 years old. So it's like they're made for us. Those guys love our product and we can reach them in that way. You know, social media is a part of this as well. Those other conversations are really important. But yeah, people reading newspapers is still amazingly effective for us, even in this day and age.
Okay, that's really interesting. I was going to ask you who it's aimed at, because I assumed it was aimed at people like me. Now, I've got to say to my listeners here, I've tried one of your cleaners, because you did your stuff. And when I said, let's do a podcast, you said I want him to try one. So one arrived over at my house, and I love it. And I love it because it looks great, by the way. And, you know, by the way, I like Dysons as well. So, you know, just because I've always had Dysons, because I like the way they look, but I love the way it looks. It's great. It's really convenient. But the thing that you realize about it, and this just does sound like an advert, I know, but it's the thing you're saying, it's cordless, but it's really light. So you're just whacking around the house, cleaning up all the time, and there's no cord there to get in the way. The only thing I would say, and this is not a criticism of it, but this is a criticism of me, is as I'm hoovering, I've got a cat, and she's a British Shorthair, so she's got very furry. So I'm forever emptying the vacuum cleaner because she gets caught up. Because I can't see inside, I've got this slight anxiety that my bag's filling up and I don't know. But I'm saying that's not a criticism. That's me constantly thinking, is the bag full? Is the bag full? How long before the bag's full? And because I've not had it long enough to you know, I've not experimented with it long enough to wait for it to be full, I don't know how long it's going to last me until my cat hair has filled up the bag to need to clear. I know, by the way, there's a light which comes on, which hasn't yet, to tell me the bag's full. But it's trying to get my head back round to using a bag rather than actually seeing the fluff. It's kind of a psychological thing, because as you said, for 30 years I've been able to see the cat fur. Now I can't. So there's just that quite strange thing that I'm kind of get used to.
It's also one of the things about our vacuum cleaner having so much capacity, because like I say, it's four times some of these cordless vacuum cleaners. If you're used to one of the normal vacuum cleaners, you're having that Mexican standoff to empty it kind of once a week or less. With our vacuum cleaner, 1.6 liters, you're emptying it much less often. We say on average, you know, with a normal size home, it might be a bag, it might be a new dust pouch every couple of weeks. But, you know, if it's not so dirty in your home, it might be a month that you go without emptying it, which our customers seem to quite like. But when you kind of go through this process for the first time, when you get the new product, it's so different to what you've known before. You're a bit like, well, is something amiss here? Is it really still filling up? And chances are it is, you know, there's just a lot of capacity in there.
So the difference is I don't have to start getting sort of knives and stuff around the filter to try and, which I probably shouldn't be doing really with these things, but to try and get all my filters clean and stuff, because I can't be bothered to wash them all the time. So I'm trying to scrape out the fluff. So I suppose that's an advantage of having a bag. How much is a bag, by the way? I mean, how much are we having to spend on those?
So the more you buy, the cheaper they are. I think we've got an offer on at the moment where you can get 52, which we from our normal usage is enough for 2 years. I think it's $25.99 they are today. So, you know, we're not the people that sell you a printer and then cream the profits on the toner. We do the dust pouches because it's the best solution. It's not the reason that we're in business. It's the best solution to make a great vacuum cleaner.
It's interesting, isn't it, that you talk about being environmentally sound. I suppose every business now, one of the first things you have to do as you're creating a product is like, how is this impacting on the environment? What's the carbon footprint of the product? That's just part and parcel of being in business now, I suppose, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. And almost you get more scrutiny as a startup. So, you know, if you're an existing brand, there's kind of, you're part of the furniture and people don't question it so much. But as a startup, I guess also because people by nature are coming to buy from a startup, they're more inquisitive, so they tend to ask more of these questions anyway. But yeah, absolutely. As I said earlier, it's really important to us, but we know absolutely it's important to our customers, which is such a high priority for us.
Now, the bit about designing a product like this, the bit I would like to do if I was going to do it, because I don't know how to work engines and things and bits and bobs like that, but I do know about what I like aesthetically. And I wonder how much effort, it must have been so cool to sit there and go, right, what colour is it? Are we going to make it? Obviously, carbon's grey, so you've gone for the grey on it, and it's a nice sleek grey with a lot of yellow buttons and stuff on it. But was there ever a time where you thought, let's do red? Come on, let's make it so it stands out in the house. We want to make it so it impacts in the house, or, you know, let's make it stripy, or, you know, the world's your oyster when you start designing it. How did that process come about, and was it exciting?
Yeah, I mean, you start at the beginning, and there's almost too much freedom. So in many ways, it's the most exciting and the most daunting part of the project. What we do with Halo Appliances, we don't want to dictate your home environment. So what we want to do is to make a great product that becomes part of your furniture. It doesn't become an objet d'art that kind of makes an impact on your home environment, or, you know, changes your home environment, which is why, you know, we're fairly muted in the way we started. I think in the future we might do some different colors, some different additions that will kind of mix things up a little bit, but it's not for us to kind of change the tone of your home. So we're very much about being in keeping with your home. But it's a fun bit of the process is when you have absolute freedom to make whatever you like, and that's, you know, there's lots of exciting bits in the creative process, but the beginning bit where you have absolute freedom is the most exciting by far.
Okay, so talk us through a bit. I hope I'm not boring you with this, Paul, but this sort of stuff fascinates me. So you're thinking, we're going to call the company Halo, we're going to call the product Capsule, we need some graphics, we need some design, we need to look at the product. Do you have to call in experts to do all that, or are you sitting there around the dinner table with your wife going, or the kitchen table going, look, I've done this drawing, what do you think? this is our logo. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're a startup, so it always comes down to, any conversation comes down to, how are we going to get this done? And, well, we already have to be paid for, you and me, so let's try and do it ourselves first. Now, fortunately, I was never particularly excellent at any one thing in product development or even, you know, running businesses. I've always been a kind of a jack of all trades, which has served me well with a startup, because there's lots of different things to do. But there are points at which we actually have to get experts in. So things like our branding, you know, we came up with the name Halo Appliances because we loved it. And we kind of had a whiteboard with lots of funny names and, you know, made up words and stuff, and just kept getting drawn back to that. So that's how we picked that name. But then we're like, well, we've got to create a logo. And I'm a designer. I design products, but I don't think I'd be very good at designing logos. So that's when we brought in experts for that. And things like, you know, electronics. I kind of understand electronics, but there's nobody in their right mind would let me actually do all the design work on a piece of electronics. So we bring in experts for that and make sure we have a level of integrity in everything we're doing as a result of that. But it's the fun thing of a startup as well is, you know, if you work for a big company, there's always somebody you can go and ask if you want to go and do something else, like move a container around the world or work out how to list something on Amazon. With a startup, you've got to work it out all yourself. And, you know, that's time consuming, but at the same time, it's really empowering, because nothing ever holds you back, because, you know, if you don't know the answer, there'll be a way of working it out. And that's been a really exciting part of the journey.
How much sleep have you lost?
Well, I had young children already when this process started, so I feel like I've just used the awake hours more productively rather than losing sleep.
How do you test them? I'll tell you a good story, by the way. I spoke to one of my dad's obviously old now, he's 80s, retired. I spoke to one of his friends who worked for a big, I can't remember which one it was now, a supermarket chain years ago. And, you know, best before dates. He told me once, oh, the way we did best before initially, I don't know if they still do this, is they would have some biscuits in the office, and then every day they'd try one until it didn't taste very nice, and then they go, oh, they last about 3 months, let's put that on them. And I absolutely love that. That's not a best before. That's not a sell by. That's a best before. A sell by means it's getting dangerous to eat a best before. And I just love that. How do you test it? Because I assume what you do is you charge up 10 of them, and then you just press go, and then you just leave them there all on in somewhere, some room, and then you see how long the battery lasts or something like that. Is that how you do these tests, or is there like wind tunnels and many lab coats?
Yeah, no, that's certainly one of the tests we do, is to switch it on and switch it off and keep charging it and see if anything breaks. We also do something called application-based reliability, which is a very grand name for pushing it around and bumping it into things. So we do a lot of that as well, where literally we have like just carpets laid out on the floor, bits of wooden floor laid out there, posts to bump into, chairs and stuff. And part of the process when we validate something new is we literally just drive it around. You know, it's a bit like I live near Jaguar Land Rover, and you see like the prototype cars with the disguises on driving around and around to see if anything breaks. We do the same thing with vacuum cleaners, just getting hours on them. There's no substitute for that, to make sure we're baking in the design life. You know, we want this to last for 10 years. And the only way we can prove to ourselves is we've made it good enough is to give it 10 years worth of abuse.
Yeah. Isn't it better to make it last like iPhones, make them last a bloody 6 months before the battery runs out, or make it so the stupid glass smashes and then you have to buy a new one or get it replaced or spend some more money? I've always thought how we accepted Apple. How would we accepted that? They make cases which can be unbreakable, and yet their phones break so easily. They might as well make them out of milk and say every 3 or 4 days they go off and you have to go and get a new one. It's so ridiculous that we've accepted that as a product, and yet we do. And we're still, even when we found out that they were conning us with the battery life and they were doing that, we're still buying their bloody products. They've got us tied in with everything, you know. It's like, it's insane. But aren't you, surely you're better off having a product which only lasts a few years, you know. Aren't your values getting in the way of a good profit margin at the end?
Yeah, I think, I mean, with Apple, there's a real stickiness there, is because you're in their system and you've got all your contacts and you can switch over to the new phone effortlessly. And that, you know, that's and again, there is this strange paradox between a new startup and an existing multinational where the way they're measured is very different. You know, if you're Apple, people know you and they kind of know there's this deal where they're going to take advantage of you and you're going to want to upgrade every couple of years. Never the same for a startup. You know, people ask you questions, why should I switch, is kind of the question, you know. But so your performance, great, fantastic. Your price is actually surprisingly reasonable. That's great. But, you know, what about your ecological credentials? What about your carbon footprint? What of all these things? And it's something very peculiar about being a startup where it attracts inquisitive people and they will ask every single difficult question you can imagine. And it's great for us because it makes our business so much more robust that people are questioning us in this way. And it makes us try harder and it makes us get all this stuff in line because we know our customers care about it.
How do you do a profit margin? How do you work that out? Because obviously you're sitting with your wife again around the kitchen table and you set your profit, your price, and then you go, we just add another 50 quid per unit, you know, we're going to Mauritius on holiday this year, you know, this is where we're all expenses to Mauritius. Should we just add more money onto it? I mean, how do you work out what's the right amount and what's not? How does that process happen?
There is some science to it. It's about, because there's the price that it costs us to make the product and there's the price we sell the product at, and there's the gap in the middle. And the gap in the middle has to feed our children, you know, it has to pay for our employees, it has to keep the lights on in the office. But there's also the bit in that which is telling people about us. And that's kind of the bit that flexes in this. I keep joking that we are the best kept secret in vacuum cleaners. We have Halo Capsule is an amazing product. You know, we know that 85% of people that know about it will want to shortlist it. It's got great attributes, great reviews, all those things, but nobody knows about us. And again, this is the thing that's changed in the last 10 years. You don't just slap it in your local electrical retailer and a few people will find it. You have to have that relationship directly with the customer, which means that you're paying to advertise it, whether it's TV, whether it's press, whether it's in social. And that's where we kind of have the choices. And like I say, you know, we bootstrap this. We start with a small amount of money. We sold some, we bought some more, and we're trying to step up and grow our business as a result of that. The thing that we flex in this is how much we talk to customers, you know, where we advertise. And that's where we have choices about, do we go on holiday to Mauritius this year? Or we don't, by the way. You know, I'm not bringing this up at home because it will be a point of contention. But, you know, it all goes back into growing the brand. You know, that gap between what it costs us to make it versus what we sell it for, a lot of that is the cost of awareness and just letting people know we exist. Because we know the more people that know we exist, the more people will want to be part of this. And that's the tough choice every time we make a sale, is how much we put back into talking about us.
What's the dream? Obviously, it's world domination. I assume at some stage you want to beat that. I didn't know Dyson had become a global brand, actually. So you just said that. Have they made it into the American market and all those sort of places?
We tend to still think of them as quite a colloquial little UK thing, but they're headquartered in Singapore now. They do more business in Asia than they do in Europe, and they are a very different business for when, you know, I worked there and they'd let a graduate run things. You know, it's a different world there now. So, you know, our ambition, you know, we're a startup. Our first ambition is to exist. You know, we're just pleased to be here and we're pleased to have a business that people want to buy product from, that people want to be part of. And that's, you know, that's been a massive step already. And then it's just about the customers that love us finding more things that they'll want to take from us. So this is why, you know, this is why we make a vacuum cleaner for a 10-year life cycle, because anybody that has a Halo capsule in their home for 10 years is going to think very fondly of Halo appliances. And we are bringing out more things. We are bringing out follow-up products that are in different categories so that people can experience more Halo appliances. And that's the dream, is that we become a watchword for something you would love to have in your home because you know it makes your life better in some way.
Yeah, can you tell us any of the products yet? You probably can't, but if you can you tell us what sort of things you're working on?
They'll all be stuff for the home is right. All I can say at this stage. And we don't do anything unless we can find a way of disrupting. You know, we are a startup. We have to have a reason to go against these massive multinationals. So we'll always have a slightly different take on things, which will be better in the eyes of the customer. That's our objective.
Have you managed to move into any other territories yet apart from the UK, or are you concentrating here for the time being?
Yeah, we have to, you know, focus on what's important to us, and the UK is our number one market. We have sold some overseas, actually. We seem to be doing quite well in the Middle East, where people seem to like our product. Regrettably, our biggest export market last year was Russia, and unfortunately, it doesn't look like we'll be selling there again anytime soon. But there are lots of other places. You know, dirt is universal, so we know there's going to be lots of other places that will be interested in the Halo.
Plenty of dirt. I heard this week that that dust being your skin is a myth. The reality is it's bits of clothes generally making up dust. Do you know anything about that? Are you in the knowledge?
Yeah, a lot of it was always the urban myth, wasn't it, that 90% of dust was human skin. But there's a lot of things that shed in your home. You know, clothes are part of that. And, you know, laundry of your clothes will create bits that come flying off that. You know, microplastics is a big challenge now because there's lots of things that are shedding microplastics. But, you know, from us, it's all dirt. You know, it's all kind of about the same particle size. It's all kind of the same kind of viscosity, and it all cleans in the same way. And this is one of the things we found with our dust pouches. So our dust pouches are compostable. So you can put them, you know, literally in your compost heap at home, or you can put them in the recycling. But we can't ever vouch for what's going on inside them. So we actually recommend that you might want to slice it open and put the dirts, you know, the microplastics or whatever, in your normal waste disposal, and then compost with the bags, because there are so many things in your home that are, you know, around forever that are not biodegradable.
That's scary, isn't it? I suppose that's where you've got to go next, getting rid of all the microplastics out of our house somehow, some sort of purifying thing. That's what you need to invent.
This is another benefit that we found with our dust pouch system. Because everything's encapsulated until the point you throw it away, it doesn't get back in your home once you've cleaned it up. Even the 500-pound bagless vacuum cleaners, we did some lab tests on those and showed that when you empty them, all the stuff is getting airborne again. So there's 10 times as many particles get airborne when you empty those bagless compared to our product when you empty them. And that's, you know, it's part of the reason why we made this product. The job of a vacuum cleaner is to get the dirt out of your home. And if it's ending up on your shoes by the kitchen bin, you've not done that job.
Just remind us how much it weighs again, the capsule.
So it's 2.6 kilos, and we always compare it to a corded vacuum, which had similar performance, might be kind of 6, 7, 8 kilograms. So, you know, it's like a third of the weight for doing the same job.
Yeah, you can definitely throw it around, that's for sure. Paul, it's been wonderful speaking to you. I've really enjoyed it, and I've learned a lot. I hope my listeners enjoyed this as well. Obviously, it's been a great advert for Capsule and Halo. If people want to buy one, where's the best place? Where are they going to get it cheapest, Paul? Have you got your own website to flog it on?
Yeah, the deals are already better on our website. Just to put Halo Capsule into your search engine, you will find us.
And if they want to follow you, you're on social media at all, talking about business and things.
We are, yes. Halo Capsule. You should be able to find us with that.
Okay. All right. So listen, as I say, I hope our listeners enjoyed listening to it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you for joining me today. Cheers, Paul.
Pleasure. Thank you, Tim.